Fuck you, Liu Kang! I have a green ring. There's no way you should be able to beat me. It's
I mean,
pretty.
If you have wood, I could probably, you know, perhaps get us like a...
I want to get a baseball bat, paint it yellow, and go after every Green Lantern.
Oh, come on, you can beat him up with a pencil. Just like it's been pointed out in, you know...
I am the greatest enemy to the Green Lantern Corps. They call me the Pencil Pusher. Hello there, and welcome to the Mild Mannered Podcast. I'm your mild mannered thespian, Mike Gilbert.
I'm your mild mannered man on the street, Sam Riedel.
And I'm your mild mannered photographer, Alex Erdy.
Success!
Woo! Yeah, that was a good intro, Mike. You brought the energy in there. I'm glad you started it this time.
Thank you. I'm really excited. I'm so glad I finally got the opportunity to show that I can bring some excitement. Yeah.
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 Would you like to thank the Academy, Mike?
Which Academy?
The Academy.
Any Academy of Intro Awards.
I'd like to thank S.H.I.E.L.D., Charles Xavier School for Gifted Students, Bruce Wayne for donating me lots and lots of money that doesn't exist.
For your acting classes?
Yeah, for the acting classes that also don't exist.
He gives lots of good speech lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eddie teaches me to talk like this.
Raspy and darkened.
I'm Batman.
Joker.
I'm Alex. Nice to meet you.
I'm gonna lose my voice when I hit 40.
Alrighty, all right. So let's get into the...
On that note.
Yeah. Let's get into the releases of the week for June 17th.
Yes, why don't we? Okay. First, we have Starman Omnibus Hardcover, Volume 3, DC, $49.99.
Sleeper, Season 1 Trade Paperback, DC, $24.99.
Green Lantern, Sinestro Corps Wars Trade Paperback, Volume 2, DC Comics, $14.99.
Hitman Trade Paperback, Volume 1, A Rage in Arkham, Trade Paperback, New Printing, DC, $14.99.
Batman, The Black Casebook Trade Paperback, DC Comics, $17.99.
Question. The Five Books of Blood? Trade Paperback, DC Comics,
$14.99? He's trying to make it like a question mark. Moving on.
I see what you did there.
Captain America, Man with No Face, Premier Hardcover, Marvel Comics, $19.99.
Ultimate Origins Trade Paperback, Marvel Comics, $19.99.
Wasteland Trade Paperback, Volume 4, Dog Tried, Indie, $11.95. Bark, bark, bark.
But who let them out?
Spider-Man, New Ways to Die Trade Paperback, Marvel, $19.99. Hasn't he found enough ways to die?
The Irredeemable Ant-Man Trade Paperback. Marvel, $34.99.
Punisher, Year One, Trade Paperback, Marvel Comics, $12.99.
Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, Season 2, Trade Paperback, Sophomore Jinx, Marvel Comics, $14.99.
I don't think those two trades could possibly have been paired up better, quite honestly.
We should do a joint review of those two together.
In drag.
Spider-Man, Mary Jane loves Punisher.
Mary Jane loves the Punisher.
All right, go on.
The Mice Templar Trade Paperback, Volume 1, Image Comics, $17.99.
X-Men Premiere Hardcover, Phoenix Rising, Marvel Comics, $19.99.
Body Bags Trade Paperback, Volume 1, Father's Day, which today is. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers and grandfathers and uncles and other guardians of sorts.
And fathers-in-laws.
And all of you kids who still have a father around and kicking. Why not get them the first trade paperback of body bags?
That'll really make them feel better.
What wouldn't?
Nexus, As It Happened, trade paperback, volume 1. Indie, $9.99.
Captain Canuck, hardcover, volume 1. Indie, $24.99, eh?
Transformers, premier edition, hardcover, volume 2. Indie, 100 big ones.
Will Eisner's Spirit Archives, hardcover, volume 26. DC Comics,
$59.99. X-Infernus, hardcover, Marvel Comics, $24.99.
I can't pronounce that.
I think it's pronounced Ghostbusters 2, isn't it?
Yeah, Ghostbusters. Yithak Premier hardcover Forsaken World Marvel Comics, $24.99. And if you don't get it, whatever word we can't pronounce, it's probably just Ghostbusters 2 in another language.
Yeah. I think that's Iranian for Ghostbusters 2.
Amazing Spider-Girl trade paperback, volume 5. Maybreak. Get it, you know, because name, right. Marvel Comics, $16.99.
Don't handle with care.
Miss Marvel trade paperback, volume 6. Ascension. Marvel Comics. $14.99.
Bride of the Water God trade paperback volume 3, Dark Horse Comics, $9.95.
Red Sonja hardcover volume 6, Indie, $24.99.
Zorro Year One trade paperback volume 1, Trail OT Fox Packs edition. I'm not sure there really was Fox Packs, but
Indie. Acronym. Acronyms 1, Alex 0.
Yeah. Maybe it's Fox, like, period Xerox edition. Maybe it's been Xeroxed.
That's the common shorthand for Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, I think so. Indie, $19.99.
Power Pack Classic, trade paperback, volume 1, Marvel Comics, $29.99.
Marvel Adventures Avengers, trade paperback, volume 9, Digest. Marvel Comics, $9.99.
X-Men, nope. T-Runt, hardcover. Image Comics, $12.99.
AP, How to Draw Transforming Robots, Package Manga. Trade Paperback, Volume 1, Indie, $12.95. I want to learn how to draw robots.
Someone buy
Army
that.
Of... Oh, sorry.
Someone buy that from Mike.
No, I want the next one.
Oh.
Go ahead, Sam.
Army of Darkness, trade paperback, volume 8. Home Sweet Hell.
The chin.
Indie, $14.99. Yes, I was just going to say, with the chin.
Classic Dan Dare, hardcover, volume 11. Phantom Fleet, Indie, $22.95.
Complete, Just a Pilgrim, hardcover, signed edition. Indie, $49.99.
That makes it more than just a pilgrim, I think. Whatever Happened to the World of Tomorrow, hardcover, Indie, $24.95.
And that concludes our picks of our trades that are coming out this week.
Now for our picks.
Sam, why don't you go first?
Okay. First off this week, I'd like to point out the Batman Black Casebook trade paperback.
Oh, that's going to be the fuck out of the week, actually, but go ahead.
Ooh. Well, it is pretty easy to despise this, because this is the companion to the Batman R.I.P. Storyline, and Grant Morrison's run on Batman in general. Yeah. I'm not particularly certain what sort of... never mind. This isn't by Grant Morrison.
This is basically all the references that Grant Morrison did make. All the really vague references that, unless you've been reading basically Batman comics for like the longest times, you wouldn't have understood those like references. But now,
if you picked up Batman R.I.P. and encountered the Batman of Zur-En-Arr staring back at you,
Color
Glory. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know what the hell was going on, and then I went online and found out, oh, hey, it's from Detective Comics way back in the day when you had the comics code, et cetera, et cetera. And the Batman traveled to another planet and met another Batman and whatnot.
Yeah, so, I really don't think it's a great idea of writing to actually make vague references to comics not many people would have read or still would be around reading until now, and then say, like, oh, in case you didn't get any of these references, here, you can buy another comic to kind of help you as a reference guide.
This is,
it's like a study guide. I don't need another study guide to read comics.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that. I mean, this is for the completist. I'd say there's another one of those. But strangely enough, and you guys know that most of the time, titles that are put out just for completists annoy the fuck out of me.
Things that piss Sam off, part 9 of 37.
Kittens oh, God. That aren't playful, and completist books.
And let's not put an ending limit on the number of things that piss me off. Yeah. I don't want to be boxed in here.
That's another thing that pisses you off.
This is it's kind of neat. It's got some classic off the wall Batman stories in here with Dick Sprang art and written by Bill Finger and all the classic guys. So if nothing else, it's a fun nostalgia kick. And it'll also help you understand something of what craziness went on. I think if you're really interested in knowing what's going on in Batman right now, this is probably required reading because of Grant Morrison's craziness.
Okay.
If you're a fan of Grant Morrison, I guess you could probably try looking at it.
Yeah. If you want to give him another shot.
Yeah.
There aren't very many of you guys left out there, but
I don't think so.
And my other pick for the week was Will Eisner's Spirit Archives.
Yay!
Volume number 26. This is, and the last volume, actually.
Hmm.
There's been a hardcover series of collecting every Spirit story that Will Eisner ever did for quite some time now, all in hardcover. Beautiful format, really. And also a hefty price tag of $60. But this is also $60 for 252 pages of the Spirit by one of the greatest minds to hit sequential art ever. So this tickles my fancy because it's crime. It's pretty funny. If you've ever read the Spirit, you know what's going on. Also, I like it for the type of storytelling cues you can pick up from it. If you have any interest in going into graphic design or comic book scripting or art, you should definitely take a look at some of the Spirit and see what Will Eisner did. Even with the opening introductions and the name, the Spirit, to introduce the title character and everything, it's really imaginative stuff. And I can't recommend Will Eisner's business hardly enough. So, with that under my belt, I'll turn it over. Those are my picks for the week.
Okay. I only have one pick for the week, so I guess I'll just go next.
Okay.
My pick of the week, I already mentioned that I love Bruce Campbell, and I would love to pick that up, but I'm actually going to talk more about something else, because we already know that we all love Bruce Campbell, and we don't want to give him more of an ego than he already has, or else he'll explode.
Yeah.
So what my other pick of the week was Punisher Year One. Now, I'm not the biggest reader of the Punisher. I've read some of his work. I've really liked some, and I've really despised a lot of them. But I love the idea of the character. It's kind of a darker than Batman, Marvel equivalents to Batman, except that he does kill. Like, that's the big difference. He's a guy with no powers who uses weapons, but he breaks Batman's cardinal rule of killing people. And I'd like to give this a try, because I've read Batman Year One, and I enjoyed that, and there are a couple of other Year Ones that are going around, so I like to see what this guy does when he restarts, gives a Punisher a reboot. So that's my pick of the week. For $12.99 for four issues, that's a pretty fair deal. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, I can't complain.
Very cool. It's a good choice, and I wanted to kind of keep it down to two, because I was end up picking way too much. So first of all, I have my first book, Spider-Man, New Ways to Die, trade paperback, written by Dan Slott and Mark Waid. Two great writers, first of all. Mark Waid did Kingdom Come, of course, and yep. Dan Slott, always a great writer, a big fan of his. And the art is by John Romita Jr.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is a fantastic combination there, and it's actually a great story. I mean, some people didn't like the whole, like, idea of, like, it's pretty cool because, kind of, Venom is, like, kind of in control of Matt Gargan, who used to be the Scorpion in the Spider-Man universe. But actually, in this one, sort of, Eddie Brock comes back after, like, he kind of has cancer and then something happens. I'm not going to say what, but he becomes, actually, the negative, the anti-Venom. Which is a really cool idea, and I mean, the art, it looks awesome. He's just
who's
awesome.
Who's the artist?
It's John Romita Jr.
Okay. I can't complain with that.
No, you shouldn't.
or Alex will find you.
Yeah, I will find you in Long Island.
Hey, don't worry, I have my yellow pencil, green boy.
Okay. And the next is, since I've been reading a lot of it, a lot of his stuff recently. The Question, the Five Books of Blood. It's I haven't read this trade yet, but I've been reading a lot of Greg Rucka. I've enjoyed all his stuff so far. I just finished actually reading Whiteout this week, which was actually this awesome graphic novel. And great writing from him. And I want to if I'm gonna have a chance to read more of him, definitely a good thing I want to pick up eventually when I have the time. And I can't even get me started on Whiteout. It was so fucking good.
I have to say, I'm not a giant fan of some of the stuff that Greg Rucka has done, mostly on his Batman work. But Whiteout was really good. I remember reading that a while ago. That was really good.
I've been meaning to read Whiteout.
And I think, like, kind of like, if you look at it, The Question is kind of Rene Montoya currently. And I think
That's right.
He wrote a really good, I think. Whiteout. I feel like he did some great work with this kind of female main character, and I feel like he could. I feel like he can repeat that with this. I haven't really seen anything about this, but I'm looking forward to reading it when I have a chance.
Yes.
And those were my two picks of the week.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, are our picks of the week. You can agree with us, disagree with us, or go out and buy the comic books Sam mentioned.
Yeah.
Only Sam's, though.
Yeah. Only Sam's? No.
You can rent.
Because I am the Lord and also the God.
there is no spoon, there is only Sam.
Yeah.
Neil!
Okay, before he gets drunk with power.
I think that's too late.
No, he's just going drunk without power. No one listens. No one's going to care.
Sorry, BRB, gotta sober up. Okay, whatever.
Okay,
you missed us listening to you sobering up.
Okay, listeners, we got some good news and some bad news this week. The bad news is we're gonna skip Masterpiece Comic Book Theater this week. Oh no. But don't worry, we promise it'll be back next week and as epic as ever, because next week will be our 10th episode.
Yeah, and for people listening, send us in some, like, things to play on the show. If you want to, like, record something for us, you know, feel free. I would love it if you called in.
I'm talking about you, Aaron Gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, Aaron.
And all our other listeners. If you want to leave us a voicemail message, you can call us up at 1-646-402-5684. And this is the number for the Dropio website, and it will actually leave us an MP3 of your recorded voicemail. And that's the number. The voicemail for that is 1-646-402-5685. And you want to call us at a certain extension, and that extension is 07345. That's 07345. So
write this down, kids.
Yeah, write this down.
I just want to take a second to say, I didn't know technology could do that, and I just kind of sat here for the last half a minute with my jaw open.
Yeah, no, it's pretty awesome, actually.
That's really cool.
There's actually even like I wish I could actually get it, but there's actually Google now has kind of Grand Central, which does the same exact thing as well. And I would love if I could get that actually working, because then you can actually get it translate, like you can actually put it to actual text as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty much because Google is like a minor deity.
Yeah, they are.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
You know, either call us at, 1-646-402-5685-07, and then the extension 07345. And hopefully, please leave us a voicemail. We'll play it on the show, and also send us a message via email, and we'll read that on the show as well.
It gets us...
Even if it's hateful.
Yeah, if you want to send us a hate-filled email talking about how fat I am, or how about
how much you hate cats?
Yeah, then go ahead.
Or how much you hate Warren Ellis? But we advise you that is not safe.
That might be hazardous to your health. I have Google Earth. I can find you.
That is just baiting right there.
We're not telling you to. We're just recommending that it's not the best idea. You can go ahead and do it, but
yeah,
don't say we didn't warn you.
And send us an email at themildmanneredpodcast@gmail.com. Actually, mildmanneredpodcast@gmail.com. There we go.
Yep.
And I think now we can do our should we do our main discussion now, or
yes. What we're going to replace Masterpiece Comic Book Theater and our what we did for the week. We're going to do just a big compendium of comic book fathers, because today is Father's Day, and as we've said before, we're going to sit and discuss some of the best, some of the worst, and some of the weirdest fathers of the comic book world. Both Marvel, DC, independent, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
And I guess what we can start off first is, let's start off with the, how about we start off with the worst fathers?
Okay.
They're the most fun.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so...
let me get the post up, actually. I lost it.
Okay, the person I picked specifically was General Thunderbolt Ross from the Incredible Hulk series. Now, why is he a nominee for the worst father? Well, why don't you ask his daughter, Betty Ross, and you'll see. And she will tell you, A, my father only cares about his career. B, my father doesn't give two shits about me unless I'm in danger. Oh, and I forgot to mention, His sole purpose is to destroy my boyfriend, who happens to be the Incredible Hulk. Which is also partially his own fault. But he won't tell you that himself. And that's basically, yes, he's a pretty cool villain. I mean, if you've read World War Hulk, he has a pretty cool moment, as Sam mentioned. But still, we're talking about the playing field of fathers, and I have to say, Ross is a pretty, pretty bad father.
There's always a stigma in society and in literature, everything, where you bring someone home and your dad doesn't approve. And no matter what orientation or gender you are, you want your parents and your dad to approve of who you bring home. Not only does Thunderbolt Ross not approve, he has all the military power of a 4-star general to back up his disapproval.
Yes, and he uses it frequently.
Yes.
He spends more time trying to destroy the Hulk than he does trying to mend his relationship with his daughter. And explain why you can't date Bruce Banner.
Exactly.
And you know, there are plenty of reasons why General Ross could just sit Betty down and say, "But Betty, I really think that you should not be marrying Bruce, considering he is a 10-foot monstrosity whenever his pulse rate rises, and could conceivably rip you apart in ways that I will not discuss because I still think of you as my little girl. I don't think you should date him." And that would be, like, understandable.
But he goes...
He just tries to kill him. I didn't get out of the way.
Your opinion doesn't matter. The Hulk's a menace. He has to die. I don't care that he's Bruce Banner.
My nominee for the actually I had one. I have one runner up for a nominee, and then I have my actual nominee. My first worst nominee is Wolverine.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Because the man is like just running around. He has kids that apparently he knows about for a long time, and is just sort of
or knows about, then forgets, then remembers, then forgets.
I mean, he has he has a clone, which really doesn't count, but then he has Dakin, who actually hates his dad a whole lot, apparently.
And, so much. So much.
And they're always fighting. And I think that's not a great thing to be as a dad.
Not to mention, he keeps him a secret until he has to say it. Yeah. They're like, hey, who's that guy in the Wolverine suit? That's my son.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
What? I had a son.
It's one thing to fight with your kid, too, and it's an entirely different thing to go after your kid with three adamantium claws in each hand.
Yeah, and your kid also has that power as well, but,
But it's the precedent that sets.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really get a dialogue going after that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And, but my actual nominee for a really bad comic book dad, Norman Osborn.
Oh, the Green Goblin!
Yeah.
And I'm a terrible father!
I think it's actually, I think he's even worse as Norman Osborn in, like, just in the regular comic book world, because, the man just, and I think in Ultimate and in Amazing, the guy is always just like, oh, Peter, you're so much better than, like, Harry, and Harry, like, why do you disappoint me so much? It's one thing for dad to be like, why, like, you know, kind of like, why aren't you doing better in school, things like that, but it's one thing for his, like, just to come out and say, like, you fucking disappoint me.
Also, later, this goes after Harry's all grown up and out of the house and everything, but Norman Osborn also directly caused the insanity, the criminal murderous insanity of his own son.
Yeah, and then he also kills Harry's, like, you know, kind of, he kills Gwen Stacy, who Harry did like as well. Like, it was sort of like my son likes her, and Spider-Man likes her. Well, that can't stand. I'll have to kill him.
Well, that doesn't add up at all. I'm going to have to do something about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to kill her!
Mike, actually, before we do anything else, could you say I'm a terrible father again in that voice?
I'm a terrible father!
I don't know why that's like the greatest thing that I've heard in that voice.
Can you tell Harry to go to bed or he's going to get a spanking?
Go to bed, or you're getting a bum up your ass! Don't give me that look, boy! Peter Parker doesn't give his uncle this trouble! Ooh, touche! Kazing!
I was trying to figure out some of the worst dads on my end, but I have to say, what always stuck in my mind was, Carrie Kelly's dad from The Dark Knight Returns. Carrie Kelly who became the female Robin.
Yeah.
And the Kellys, this isn't all on her dad. Her mom does it too, but
yeah.
They're always downstairs. We never see them, but they're just downstairs watching the TV news and smoking pot.
Yeah, and I think that's really, it is really funny that you mentioned that, because I had to look it up and I was like, oh, them. Oh, right, yeah. They're pretty shitty parents.
There's one panel where there's a smoke cloud that rises, and her dad says, hey, don't we have a kid? And they completely fail to realize that not only do they, in fact, have a kid, FYI, but also that child has managed to buy a Robin suit, a classic Robin suit, and has gone off shinnying down the drainpipe and leaping from rooftop to rooftop.
And managed to receive privilege from an old man in a Batman costume.
A naked old man in a cave.
Yeah.
What kind of influence is that? Not a good one.
But probably in the long run, a better one than the parents that she's got.
That's saying
something. When Batman is a more attentive and caring father than your biological father.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to say, it's kind of interesting, because I just actually read this week, one of the things I did read was Batman and Son by Bruce Morrison.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and it's really funny, because, you know, it's sort of like, do you guys know about Damian?
Oh, yeah!
And I think it's really funny, because Damian is actually the son of, you know, of Batman. Like, kind of him and Talia's, like, kind of love relationship. And it's just this really funny thing where just, like, Damian is just a horrible kid. Like, with a name like that, of course, he's a shitty kid. And,
Remember, kid, you can judge a book by its cover.
Exactly. And he's just like, you know, you kill this food, and it's just like, I hate you, Dad. And it's great, because he actually, like, the one thing he does to actually get him under, like, his son under control is like, you'll be given opportunities to prove yourself to me. Until then, patience is a virtue. And it's great.
Ow.
And it's great. He starts this off, though, by, enough! You dishonor your sensei with a loss of composure.
Ooh.
It's just hilarious that that's how he gets him under control. And it's, his son basically still is nuts, and he's never able to actually handle him. And I think, and it kind of says a lot that he can't handle his own son, but he can actually kind of be a better mentor to a lot of other kids still.
Wayward youths and whatnot.
Yeah.
But not wayward youths that like to kill people creatively with knives.
Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah. I think we've missed someone very important. Okay.
Do you want to get your other one out of the way, Mike?
Well, I it's not that it's not one I picked. It's just someone that we all agreed was a pretty shitty father.
Yeah.
How could we miss Magneto? I mean, you just have to look at his kids and see how messed up they are at this point in the X-Men Marvel world.
Yeah.
It's just
his sexual relationship too busy to actually deal with you know, ever actually talk, you know, spending time with them, except if it's all about like, oh, we need to save like mutants from people.
Son, I'm so proud of you. Now go kill Charles Xavier.
Yeah.
And if you don't kill him, you're not getting supper.
Yeah. And usually... I don't think he ever uses the word proud when he's talking to his son.
And then you go to Scarlet Witch, who's a mental mind fuck to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he suffers from the same thing as Norman Osborn as well. Like, kind of just this general focus on everything else but the kids.
Yeah, everything else is kind of,
He treats them more like pawns on a chessboard.
Yeah.
And so, they wind up going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, are we noticing a trend?
Ah, yes.
All right, moral I think story... we should time to move on to good comic book dads, because it's kind of getting late already, so...
Okay, we're going to move on to the best comic book dads. And, okay, I guess we can talk about the first one, like, as all three of us. I mean, technically, he's not a biological father to said superhero, but... Ben Parker is, as Sam put, one of the, you can't think of anyone more paternal in the Marvel Universe than Ben Parker.
True.
Except for that, basically, he's only around for, like, the beginning of each Spider-Man story.
Yeah. And but that's...
That's the beauty of it.
Is that he's just so... Well, we see a little bit more of him in, like, Peter's flashbacks every once in a while.
And there are some issues of kind of Spider-Man. Like, I think there was a recent one that I did pick up a while ago with Tony Harris. I can't remember what it is. Like, Spider-Man... you keep talking, sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, but even in that one issue of Amazing Fantasy, it's just good old Ben Parker sitting down making sure Pete's got enough wheat cakes in him. And looking out for him and making sure that he knows he's loved, and no matter what happens at high school, you know, those kids can pick on you, but you're always great. What you doing up there in your room? You got some science going on? That's good. That's good. You keep going on that. And it's not stated as such, but it's successfully underwritten. That's actually one of the most subtle and best done moments of the old Marvel era.
Marvel era is
not really known for its subtlety or anything, but you can definitely tell it's.
Yeah.
Sorry, you go ahead, Mike.
And I was gonna say, not to mention his influence on Peter Parker throughout his entire existence is huge. That the biggest quote that the most famous quote, "With great power comes great responsibility," comes from none other than Ben Parker, and that's basically what Spider-Man lives and dies by. It, like, he had many, many points. He decided he was going to quit being Spider-Man, but then he'd remember that little message that his uncle gave him, or some kind of moment from his past, and he'd be like, no, I can't do it yet. No, with great power comes great responsibility. I need to do this, you know, for Uncle Ben.
That even is sometimes more powerful to him than his... code against killing or any sort of that, any sort of compass that guides him always comes back to the responsibility that he has.
Yeah, and also but I just wanted to just point out that the actual miniseries that I was mentioning before is called Spider-Man with Great Power, and it's actually this five-issue comic book series written by David Lapham and illustrated by Tony Harris, and it's just focusing on the kind of the period of time right between like Spider-Man Peter Parker getting the powers and then like Uncle Ben's actual murder. So it's actually these five issues where it's Uncle Ben is actually one of the main characters. And I think if you
want to... That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm looking that up right now.
It's a you know very cool art. I enjoyed it. I think it's great because you kind of get to see Uncle Ben actually getting angry with Peter for being like doing stupid things.
What are you doing, boy?
Yeah, he actually does the he actually comes to like you know drag Peter and his this girl that he like likes from this club that they went to because you know they're underage.
But you know I guess any kid would be upset with that. But then. Mm-hmm. It's like Ben. He's like he's not really his father. He's looking out for him.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting to sort of see him like actually kind of be this parental figure instead of just oh he's always dying. I think it's a unique look to sort of see him.
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah,
Uncle Ben, you're always dying. What is that?
Yeah.
Why do you leave me?
Every first issue. Why?
We talk about Uncle Ben till the cows come home.
Exactly. So, speaking of cows, I think one of my picks would be Pa Kent, another kind of elderly kind of figure to a superhero parental unit.
And Pa.
Yeah, and I think he's a great character, and he's still alive, of course. So that adds bonus points for I guess in the ways of fathers.
Take that, Ben.
Yeah. I think, and it's actually like I kind of after reading kind of Escape from Bizarro World, where it is just this focus on like you know kind of Papa Kent and you know and kind of Clark. I think it's this interesting kind of thing where it's just he is a dad, and I think it's kind of interesting because this little miniseries, it kind of shows the relationship and it sees like these moments of them like when Clark is a kid and he's just like. I promise I won't use my superpowers too much, you know, just like, you shouldn't use it, you know. And it's him being, like, just trying to be a dad to, like, you know, this kid with these powers, and I think he's really sensitive about it, and I think it's really funny because when he's on Bizarro World, he gets these powers.
You try managing teenage Superman.
Exactly. And when he gets these powers, actually, when he's on Bizarro World, I think it's hilarious because he's trying to protect Superman. He's just like, this is for killing him for the first time. And it's him beating up Doomsday, and I think it's hilarious to sort of see that.
I think what Pa Kent did is really this. It's the greatest success story ever.
Yeah,
he actually managed to take the most powerful single being in the universe, really, and convince him to like and say, "Hey, I know that like biologically you're not human, but you're my son. You are by virtue of being my son, human." And remember that. And he impressed that so well on Clark that he remains human, even though that he can do anything that he wants on the world.
Not to mention that sense of morals that Superman has, those undying morals come from, you know, the teachings and advice from Pa Kent.
Why doesn't Superman kill Pa Kent?
I think there's one way to describe Pa Kent, and I think that's Norman Rockwell. Like, the man is like a Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah. Without the racism.
Yeah. And it's just sort of that really interesting kind of character. It's like he's just very old, like 1950s, like parent, but really sweet and not like kind of the bad parts of 1950s. Just all the good, you know, kind of. He's very, the man is like just so Leave It to Beaver-esque, kind of. And I think it's like.
He is.
Okay, do we want to hit one more good father and then move to the weird ones?
Only one more?
Well, I think we should touch on this person because he's a big force in his domain, I guess. In the world of Batman, there is one person that I think could be counted as a good father, and that's Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to see it is also if you want to read Batman Year One, I think he shows up. His kind of just because he isn't even a dad yet, but his wife is pregnant, and I think it's just. These great moments of him worrying about having a kid, and I think it's just sort of great to sort of see someone thinking like that, where it's not like, oh, like I love my kids. It's just like, why am I even thinking of bringing up a kid in this place?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's concerned about the child before it's born. That's a father for you. And I mean, personally, the one that I think of is the one that I read in Batman: The Dark Knight Returns, where Commissioner Gordon's at the you know, he's over the hill, he's about to retire and everything, and all his soliloquies, you know, he's worried about his daughter. He talks about how proud he is of her and how she used to fight crime, and he accepted that.
Yeah.
And one of the strongest parts for me was when his house is, he's under attack and his house blows up and he's panicked. He's like, oh my God, where's Barbara? Where's Barbara? Oh no. Oh no. I can't lose her now. No, yeah. No. And he's ready to defend her. Like, he still kicks ass at fucking 80.
Yeah.
And
he's worried about Barbara, even though she can handle herself well enough.
Yes. And like, he's not, and like, not in the overprotective sense, more in the, you know, loving father sense. Like, mm-hmm. You know, he's not saying, you can't do this on your own. He knows that his daughter's well capable of taking care of herself, but he wants to help as best he can. He's that kind of person. He's very diligent.
He has this job being police officer, but he still wants to, like, he's not trying to avoid his family and, like, just stay out, work on the job. He really wants to come home.
Yeah. Not to mention, go ahead, Sam.
If I recall correctly, near the end of year one, when baby James gets chucked off a bridge.
Yeah.
He jumps right after there. I mean...
Yeah.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Batman is, like, right after that, and Batman, of course, manages to fall faster than Jim Gordon, and Castle Baby makes sure it's all right. But Jim is just like, that's my kid. Blah!
Yeah.
And
he's not standing there
hopeless. That should be an instinct of any father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the kind of the dedication that this is my kid. I have to save his life. That's instinctual. If you jump off a bridge, you could die.
If you're a baby.
Yeah, but yeah, and Jim Gordon is a father to the point where that just doesn't matter.
Exactly. And also, yeah, I think we want to make a... I just want to, like, I think we should just mention the two other... because I'm kind of curious why Sam picked this. These two dads. And I just want to say that one of my other picks as well is Rick Grimes from The Walking Dead.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, I can see
it
that.
It takes a certain caliber of dad to lead your son through a zombie apocalypse.
Exactly, I think that says a lot if you can keep your son alive for that long and, you know... And you're that, you know, it's not like, oh, I gotta run for survival. I still have to take care of my son, and I gotta teach him how to do things and how to be good.
Shoot.
But, Sam, tell us who you picked and why, because I'm kind of interested, and I never even knew this about this part.
I picked Apollo and the Midnighter from the Wildstorm universe. And they're a superhero gay couple. Actually, test tube baby superhero gay couple, which makes them one of the most
First of all, they're a gay couple, and they have a test tube baby.
Well, no, they are test tube babies. They're like genetic creations and modified dad superpowers and everything.
Yeah, okay.
And they have, and at this point in kind, they are married, and they have adopted Jenny Quantum. And Jenny Quantum is, along with one of Warren Ellis's creations, which is the Century Babies. Jenny Quantum is the spirit of the 21st century. So what happens to her happens to the century, pretty much.
Yeah.
Or maybe the other way around. Nobody's really sure. But at any rate, they adopt her, and they are fiercely protective, and they aren't the best, most wholesome kinds of dads, like the way we've been talking about, but they are protective of her to a fault. Homicidally protective of her, most often.
Ah.
Now, she doesn't necessarily need it, like you guys were saying with Barbara, because she's the most powerful being in the known universe, the known multiverse. But,
and
regardless...
she's also the most powerful being in the multiverse who had to read the book, Why Do I Have Two Daddies?
She does, actually. Yeah.
That's an awkward conversation.
Well, you see, when two men get together and they like to kill people together very, very much, But you see, and this is why, because Apollo can take in solar radiation and unleash it in I-beams and a general energy discharge from any place on his body. And the Midnighter is the world's ultimate fighter who can plan out how every possible way that a fight will go before he fights it.
And, so he knows everyone's possible weakness.
Yes, he can see your enhancements buzzing away under your skin, etc., etc.
He keeps a yellow baseball bat under his bed.
If you come up to them and are thinking about maybe possibly one day poking Jenny Quantum in the stomach and making her cry, your brains are going to make a very, very nice carpeting. So they might not be the most wholesome of dads, but they are they're effective.
All right.
And if you want to date Jenny Quantum when she turns 16, knuckle crack, you're gonna have to get through them.
through the dads of outer space and ridiculous.
You thought Thunderbolt Ross was bad.
All right, so the next topic we have are dads that are sort of up in the air. Like, they could either be really good or really bad if you look at them.
Or just weird.
Do you want it like? Yeah. Okay, so what was your pick, Mike? Because I had a couple picks.
Well, I have the same pick as I believe Sam put down on. We can talk about. I guess we can talk about Morpheus from The Sandman by Neil Gaiman. Because I know you put him down, and I thought about it for a while, and I'm like, you know what? He's a pretty weird father. Because technically, he's technically not a human being. He's just the personification of a concept. But he does have sex with a muse and creates a mortal boy. And he's technically a father.
He is a father. He, according to Neil Gaiman's mythos, the Morpheus is the father of Orpheus, appropriately enough. And so all the legend that goes along with Orpheus is somewhat Morpheus's fault.
Yeah.
But it's his fault because he, once again, Daddy didn't pay enough attention. And because he's just not an emotional being. He's not a particularly loving person. When he does love, bad things happen. And when he fails to love, also bad things happen. So he doesn't invest himself enough in his son's love and his son's wedding and everything.
Not to mention, he disowns his son at the first sign of a little bit of defiance. The first sign of his son trying to make his own state his own opinion. The first time he's challenged by his son, he goes, "You're not my son anymore. Goodbye. Go away. What are you still doing here? Get out of here."
And then he goes up to brood in his tower.
Which he does even with women.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he doesn't come back until his son's a severed head, thanks to the Bacchae.
Yeah.
And then his son spends hundreds and hundreds of years as a severed head until his father comes back to make amends.
And to apologize a little bit. "Hey, son, sorry about the whole beheading and having you live as a head thing. I'll kill you now. And is that cool? Yeah, that'd be great. If you could just stop this whole thing."
I hope you get what's coming to you. Wink, wink.
But this is, that's the weird part. I mean, because up until now, he's pretty bad. But
he does
when Orpheus
bad.
Is a severed head, he also sets up an entire monastic order in the foothills of Italy to take care of his son's head and to move it from room to room and make sure he's got a nice view and he's properly taken care of and guarded and everything. And this is the family's entire mission. Passed down through the generations is to take care of this undying severed head.
That's where you're like, is he that bad? I mean, it's like he's compensating, I feel.
Yeah. It's a nice gesture.
So I had three different kind of picks for the kind of, it really, you could debate, you could, like, they're really debatable. First, the Pride, which you're going to think, like, from the Runaways, you're going to think first, it's like, oh no, they're horrible parents. But the thing is, they're doing all these horrible things so their kids can live forever.
Pleasure and pain, I guess.
They're all supervillains, and they're all doing these really horrible, like, they're sacrificing people, and they're just doing all these things just so their kids can actually be living, like, can become immortal.
And that means that if their kids live forever, that means that when their evil masters come up and destroy every other human life in the world, that means that they're going to die.
Yeah.
So the success of their mission means that they die instantly. But their kids get all sorts of glory.
And I think it's just sort of that interesting thing. It's just like, you gotta remember, it's sort of like what parents say. It's like, you just don't understand. You're too young. Like, and I think it's that kind of funny expression put into a whole comic book.
Oh, but one of them understands all too well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No comment.
Yeah. But I will ruin something because it's been out for a while, yeah. Like 60 issues in so far. But Omni-Man from Invincible.
Oh God.
I haven't read Invincible, so I'm gonna let you two talk about him because I have yet to get to the Invincible. So
I think it's this character that
It's about 8 issues in that it's revealed. So it's
yeah, and I think it's really interesting because he's this great dad. He's really cool, actually. He's just like, you want to fight crime together at the beginning, right?
Yeah. You want to go out and bust some heads, son?
Yeah.
Yeah, dad.
What?
It's really wholesome. Like, you know, it's sort of like, oh, he's teaching him, explaining all these superpowers to him and like what's going to happen to you.
This is a headlock.
But yeah. Then, 8 issues in, it turns out he's basically here to sort of take over the world.
As an evil alien sleeper agent.
Yeah.
What?
And it's this weird thing where it's like, he beats the shit out of his son because Mark won't go with him.
He hoped that when the time came that he had to get back to his mission, then his son would do the quote-unquote right thing and sell out his adopted planet so that the invasion force could come in and waste everything. And his son's like, no, I'm not going to do it. So Omni-Man beats the ever-loving hell out of his son. It's the most...
Like, he still wants him to join him, too. It's sort of like he's trying to beat him until he accepts to join him, and it's sort of like this... Well, he tried to do his best to raise him well. I mean, obviously, he did a good job.
He raised him awesomely, clearly.
Yeah, he did a great job. I mean, he was a fucking good dad until it turns out he's evil. And when he's evil, he still wants to sort of like... He still loves his son, I mean.
Yeah.
It's not like Norman Osborn, who just... still really just does not care about his son.
And it's worth mentioning, I think, that he still thinks that, like, this is the best thing for Earth.
Yeah.
That they're going to invade and everything. And
yeah,
so
it's
he
better
wants,
that they do show these, like, that they do invade him.
He wants to save the world, and he wants his son's help. And his son is sitting there going, like, no, I'm not gonna be any part of your plan to save the world. And he's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But then there's the whole violence.
Yeah, and it's that crazy kind of relationship, and it really is up in the air. It's just like, it's really hard to say whether he's good or bad as a dad. And then
As a puny Earthling, I'd have to say that he was bad, but anyway.
Yeah, but then as my final pick, Reed Richards, because, you know, he may provide a good family, like, you know, he has a, you know, mom and dad are together, and they have a great place to live, and, you know, lots of cool, like, you know, brings home a lot of cash. But he's also in the fucking lab, like, 24/7, and he's hardly there. They're always fighting crime.
He doesn't treat Sue very well, which can't be good for the kids.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's sort of like this, it's the dad that always works too late.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Little League Game Kid, you know. And it's just like, he's a good guy. He's like, he is a good superhero, but I mean, when it comes to dad, he still has some things to learn, I think.
And he's also, before we go, being a good superhero is not always the best thing for your kid.
Exactly.
When you're a good enough superhero, that your biggest enemy is Galactus the World Eater. Yeah. It creates a problem.
And I think that's it for our picks. Mike, you have anything more that you want to say? Mike? Okay, Mike's disappeared somewhere.
I think we lost Mike.
Yeah, he's not responding. Let's just.
Am I here? Hello.
Hey.
Oh, there we go.
I'm sorry. I pissed off the void again. He came back, and I had to scare him away with my...
Oh, how'd you scare him away?
I can't tell. I can't tell you or else he'll learn. Guys, I can't tell you or else he'll figure it out.
He's sort of like the freak. He comes back stronger and you can't use the same thing you used on him last time. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, I had nothing else to say.
Okay, nothing else to say. Well, let's move on to our main review then of Deadpool Appreciation Week.
Yeah, like we'd like to call Deadpool Appreciation Week, where each of us had gone out and read something about the Merc with a Mouth and are going to discuss him in triplicate. Haha, because it's three of us.
Hey, alrighty. It also works because there's three voices in Deadpool's head.
Yeah.
Whoa. Or did I just rock your mind?
You did. You did. Congratulations.
Would anyone like to go first? Because I don't mind going first.
Yeah, go ahead. Go first, Mike.
Okay. I had a hard time figuring out what I exactly wanted to do with Deadpool. So then I'm like, okay, why don't I go to the guy's roots? So I went way back to some of his earlier comics. I read the first three volumes of Deadpool and Cable, where Marvel Comics likes to call them the odd couple. And I thought that, I thought that summed them up pretty well. They are like the odd couple, except they're superheroes. Unstable superheroes. I mean, overall, they're a lot of fun. I believe, yeah, If Looks Could Kill, which is issues 1 through 6, The Burnt Offering, 7 through 10, and 30 Pieces, 11 to 12. They're a lot of fun. They're very fun little arcs. You know, they're not always on the same side, and then they're on the same side, and then they're not, and it goes back and forth. Like, you know, like an angry two men, like two angry men in the Odd Couple are, you know.
Yeah.
Except they answer with gunfire and mutant powers. And overall, I'd have to say, I'll give it a midway, because every now and, like, yes, I love the action scenes, and but the thing is, Deadpool was the only source of interest. Because Cable, although no offense to Cable, but he seemed really preachy, talking about this is how the world has to be and everything. And I understand he came from the future and all, but he just kept going on and on and on. I'm like, where's Deadpool? Please say something funny. So I'm gonna give that a midway, because that's just what I thought. I mean, I love Deadpool as a character, but he was probably the only source of entertainment in the series for me.
Do you go next, Sam, or shall I?
You go right ahead.
Alright, so I had already picked up, as I've said before, Deadpool Secret Invasion, Volume 1, and then I also picked up Dark Reign Deadpool. I was actually going to try and find Volume 5 of Wolverine Origins, which is basically Deadpool versus Wolverine, and it's sort of been described to me by Aaron freaking Gold about countless times before.
We love you, Aaron Gold!
about want you.
About how Deadpool drops a piano on Wolverine.
Ha!
Okay.
It's this whole, like, the whole issue, the whole, like, arc is basically this whole lead-up to this one moment where he manages to get Wolverine to stand on a giant X and has basically this piano dropped on him. Just for the fun of it, while he's trying to kill
him. Holy Calvin and Hobbes.
And it's one of, like, the hardest, trade paperbacks to actually pick up. It's actually hard to pick up and trade. Not, like, the single issues, the actual trade paperbacks. Like, I actually called up all four of the major, comic book, retailers in New York City. Yeah, none of them had him. None of them had it in stock. And it's one of those things, it's just like, wow, I guess it is worth it. Like, I wanted to pick it up, and I was really sad, because I think I had actually seen it at a Barnes & Nobles, and I'm disappointed I didn't pick it up at the time. But instead, I picked up Dark Reign Deadpool, which I had read kind of, like, disjointedly before. And let's just start off with, I gotta just say, one of my favorite writers now has to be Wei. I think it's Daniel Wei. I keep forgetting what the first name is, actually. It's, Daniel Wei is the writer, and that's actually just... He's become one of my favorite writers now. I can't see him writing for anyone else except Deadpool now. I don't think he's done anything else besides Deadpool. I gotta look this up now that I've mentioned it. But the man knows how to write funny. he has written some fucking, like, funny storylines. Like, in Deadpool Thunderbolts, it's Deadpool versus the Thunderbolts, of course, and it's great because he has a big, humongous, like, big, humongous crush on the, Black, Widow. He's leaving her notes, and it's like, he actually has a plane flying by with, Black Widow loves Deadpool. Call 212-555-4685 right while they're having their mission. It's hilarious. And it's just like this long storyline where he's like, he actually has a kind of the Taskmaster working with him as like dressed up as Deadpool, so he can sort of be at two places at once. And it's just sort of
wait,
like,
there's no, can't answer anyone better than Taskmaster.
Yeah, and because like Taskmaster can remember all your moves and everything like that, so it looks exactly like it. And you know, his but like, and Deadpool Secret Invasion, it's a great beginning. Great beginning. I have it in hardcover. It's out in trade now. I would highly suggest it because it is just a funny, like, a way of reading about, like, Secret Invasion. Because it's him with Super Skrulls. And it's, like, basically the Super Skrulls are just trying to kill him, and it's like, he wants to kill him, and it's just like, you guys need me, come on, I'm gonna train you all how to, like, and you can make clones out of me. And they make, there are tons of Deadpool clones, and they don't know anything about how to be Deadpool, and so Deadpool teaches them how to be himself. And that just leads to horrible, horrible things.
I can only imagine, as I've read it, and I know what happens. It doesn't end well for the clones.
Yeah. And I think this is fantastic. And,
or the Skrulls.
Yeah. And it's just some
it's a good
great
time.
Scenes. And it's just a whole, like, if you want a good laugh, pick up any Deadpool, anything from Deadpool written by Way. And so, Sam, what did you pick up?
Well, I ventured outside of the conventional 616 universe that Marvel has set up, and I picked up Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 16 with the first appearance of Ultimate Deadpool in it. And I have to say, it was kind of weird.
It was. I actually was looking at it, and I looked for the issues, like, because I never actually read it, and I was just like, so he's on a television show. Interesting.
If you haven't read much Ultimate Spider-Man, then basically the concept of Ultimate Deadpool is that he is an extreme mutant hater. He hates mutants so much that he has undergone genetic experimentation so that he can change his face, make himself look like anyone, and then get up close and kill you.
So he
bears just about no resemblance to the normal Deadpool. Absolutely none. He doesn't crack very many jokes, if any at all. There's no breaking of the fourth wall, because one of Deadpool's claims to fame is, of course, he knows he's in a comic book.
And
some writers do that,
and he
exploits it.
And Ultimate Deadpool is just on a TV show that Ultimate Mojo has going on, where they hunt mutants. They bring them to an island and hunt them down for sport. And that's his deal. He's not a mercenary.
He's a hunter?
He is a television hunter.
Like Kraven?
He's like Wade Wilson, the mutant hunter, instead of the crocodile hunter. Crikey,
yeah.
Mate. Check out
I'm gonna take out these here mutants while I talk about how awesome I am.
The only real resemblance that he holds to his 616 counterpart is that he does have a kind of a mouth on him. He's sarcastic, he's snide, and he knows how to get inside your head and screw with you. But other than that, it's not actually a Deadpool story. It's got a guy named Deadpool in it. As a Spider-Man and X-Men story, absolutely, thumbs up. I like Bendis, I like what he does when he gets his hands on Spider-Man and stuff. As a Deadpool story, if I gave it thumbs sideways, it would be more than generous.
I give thumbs up to mine as well. I forgot to mention that. And yeah. I honestly think that we need to do another episode of this, just because I don't think we got what we came for from Deadpool.
No.
Well, we'll take a while to come back to him. I'm sure he'll come up again.
I think we should do. If we are going to do it, I think we need to do that. We all need to read that Wolverine Origins Volume 5.
We will have comments.
Yeah.
No, but Deadpool, never fear. This may be the end of our Deadpool appreciation week, but Deadpool always comes back.
Yeah, because he has mutant healing.
And he doesn't need a lame one-liner to say it.
Exactly.
Nope. But he'll use one anyway, because hey, why not?
Or MacGuffin. You never know.
He's a merc with he wouldn't be the merc with the math if he didn't say something.
Exactly.
Honestly. And don't forget, the Deadpool movie is coming out pretty soon.
Yeah,
with Ryan.
Maybe we should save it for that. I think the next Deadpool appreciation thing.
Yeah, why not?
We all go together to see the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just no one use that. No, just no one use that penis in the popcorn trick on me. Okay. I've fallen for that too many times already.
If we all go together, somebody has to promise me to paint my face red and black.
Okay.
That would all be right. Fun. I'm a terrible father.
I
think I.
Well, everybody, you've been listening to the Mild Mannered Podcast.
Yes, you have.
Father's Day / Deadpool special.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to our 10th episode next week.
Yeah.
So, this is Mild Mannered Thespian Mike Gilbert saying, see you next time.
This is Mild Mannered Man on the Street saying, so long.
And this is Mild Mannered Photographer saying, I'm a terrible, terrible father.
And we will see you here next time on the Mild Mannered Podcast.
Go play.
Bye-bye. Yeah, you don't like that brick wall, do you, Shao Kahn? No, you don't. Because it's a green brick wall.